The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with the spirit of the 76ers. Two games and all's well. Is Philly flying all the way to the finals? Meanwhile, can you smell what the chef is cooking? Did Steph prove last night that his is really the team to beat? Plus, wait a minute. Did you hear Mr. Mahomes say ta-ta to Tyreek? Does he really believe it himself? You'll hear it for yourself and make up your own mind. Oh, we are jam-packed on this Tuesday, and we're getting up starting right now and take a look at the squad. We've got Diana's ready to go. McNutt has made her triumphant return from parts beyond sun vacations. I don't know what's going on. Meanwhile, we got all kinds of other insight for you here. Louis Riddick is ready. Michael Tannenbaum is ready. And Seth Greenberg had his first grandson over the weekend. Attaboy, Uncle Seth. And we begin with the action from last night. We got the Nuggets. We got the Warriors. It was the game of the night. And McNutt, they've got the new death lineup going now in Golden State. They were trailing early, but then they went to that group of five smalls, and Steph Curry had it going early.
Greeny, this is called ocean mode, okay? Not only was Steph Curry just throwing the ball all over the place and hitting shots, so was Jordan Poole, which I'm sure we'll get into at length. The offense for this squad moves so seamlessly. The way that they were able to assist one another and get wide open looks was crazy.
And take a look at this nice pass here from Jordan Poole. Oh, well, behind the back action for Klay Thompson. Take another look.
Man, 60 assists on 89 makes in the two playoff games for the Warriors, and that one was as pretty as any of them.
And the run was 23-4. Now here's Steph again. The run is 26-8 to end the half, and Mike Malone says, well, I got no answers here. And then, frankly, things would start getting worse. Frustration carries over in the third quarter. You got Will Barton, you got DeMarcus Cousins, they're into it. It continued into the huddle.
You know, sometimes intensity is good. I'd like to believe that the Nuggets will take this home with them and be inspired. Let's get it together, y'all.
We'll find out. Third quarter, Warriors by 16, and Steph wasn't done. That's the three plus the foul.
Oh, my goodness.
He would score 34, Warriors up 20, and then Nikola Jokic, his night ended early. He's looking for a call there. He doesn't get it. He's going to get himself thrown out. You know who loved it? Draymond loved it. Draymond said, hey, that's usually my shtick. Jokic's night ends. Poole scored 29. Seth says, it's great to be back.
It was a long four and a half weeks, and obviously game one was the goal. And a lot of hard work went into it. To be in this moment, this environment after 2 years, absence from the playoffs, it means a lot.
When you beat a team the way we did the first game, they come out and they give you their best punch. And they did that. You know, we took the punch on the chin. We responded right away. We got control of the game. You know, just to see our group respond the way they did, that's special.
Yeah, they took the punch, and then they went to that small lineup, the new version of the death lineup. Curry, Poole, Klay, Draymond, and Wiggins. They've outscored the Nuggets by 29 points in just 11 minutes on the floor in the first two games. Overall, this combination is shooting 77% from the floor, 87% from three-point range. How are you going to beat that? Let's find out. Let's go to Uncle Seth here. No relation. What are you going to do? When they put that group on the floor, Seth, I mean, we've seen them ride that thing to championships before. How does it look to you right now?
Looks terrific. They're the best passing-cutting team in the NBA. It's not even close. And when you can impose your identity on the game by going small and making Denver match up with you, Denver doesn't have a matchup. Think about this, Greeny. 39 points off cuts. The next closest in the playoffs. The next closest team in the playoffs, points off cuts, is 18. You're talking about a team, a great passing, cutting team with great spacing. You have that small lineup. You got floor gamers. You got shot makers. You got guys that can be active and alert defensively, creating offense out of their defense. That small lineup, Denver does not have a matchup for. They dominate the game with their identity. And that's what playoff basketball is all about. Dominate the game with your identity. Force the other team to match up with you. Denver cannot match up with Golden State.
You know, McNutt, sometimes these first-round series are a little dangerous to read into because, you know, you're not necessarily – Denver is obviously – they played the whole season without so many of their good players. But as we sit and watch them, when they go to this, you think, wait a minute, maybe this is the Golden State team we saw early in the season when they looked like the best team in the league, not Phoenix. Is this real, what we are seeing right now?
Oh, is it real? I do think that it's real, Greeny. However, I do expect the next matchup to present a little bit more defensive resistance. You look at a stat that says 48% of the Warriors' field goal attempts last night were uncontested. Credit the Warriors for the offense, but also it leaves you scratching your head a little bit in terms of the defensive constitution of Mike Malone's gang. Listen, we knew about the firepower that the Warriors potentially had. But let's not forget, as you opened our conversation, the part of the reason that Nikola Jokic turned so many heads was because he was working with so little. And this, to me, is heavily revealed in a postseason series versus a single game.
So I think that's really the point here, Seth. Are we seeing a mismatch? I mean, just, you know, a really good team against a less good team that doesn't have some of its better players? Or are we seeing a signal that the Warriors are really the biggest threat to Phoenix?
I think we're seeing the Warriors are a biggest threat to Phoenix. And, yeah, obviously, the Nuggets don't match up all that well. Obviously, Jokic, they're pulling Jokic away from the basket. They're putting him in ball screens, dribble handoffs, pin downs. But it's how the Warriors are playing. It's not just what they're doing, but how they're doing it. Who can match up with this team in terms of their ability to space the floor, convert from defense to offense, their ability to pass, their ability to cut? They score more points off cuts than anyone in the NBA. They play differently than anyone in the NBA. They're not ball screen reliant. They're pass, cut, space, skill, floor gamers reliant. They're a harder team to match up with because of their skill set, and they play differently than anyone else. If they can impose their identity on the game, they can play with anyone and beat anyone, including the Suns.
Okay, that's fair. In the beginning of the season, Steph Curry was in the MVP conversation. At the end of the season, Joel Embiid is in the MVP conversation. He and the Sixers on the floor last night taking on Toronto in Game 2 after a magnificent performance in Game 1. And you know what? On this night, McNutt, it was all Embiid in the first quarter.
Yes, you can see the chip on his shoulder, the energy. This play in particular, there was another one where he gets an offensive rebound. I think this is it.
This is it.
Make. I mean, the energy of your 7-footer off the ground first around three Raptors defenders, Joel Embiid was not messing around.
He had 19 in the first quarter. Nick Nurse looks like he needs a doctor. A second quarter, a Sixers up by 8. Look at Harden dancing.
Yeah, great, cool. We haven't seen a bunch of offensive explosion from James Harden so far, but the Sixers haven't needed it.
Sixers exploded to a 15-point halftime lead, and then Harden throwing it up, and Embiid throwing it down. So they're working together comfortably in this one. Fourth quarter, it's an 11-point game. It's still a game, if you will. And then here's Tyrese Maxey, the hero from Game 1.
This play was like, come on, man. Like, all the momentum is on the side of the Sixers. I mean, Tyrese Maxey is emerging in these playoffs, but that play, give me a break.
And then Danny Green throwing it down. Embiid would score 31. And then look at this at the end of the game. He and Nick Nurse kind of having some words. And he would say later, I'm going to use a different word than he used. He said he told Nick Nurse to stop complaining about the calls. Mm-hmm. He used a different word. Mm-hmm. But one way or another, you got the Sixers looking very good. Two games. Games. They've been the better team, clearly, and they've been better than they've been this year since Harden got there. Their average point differential up 12 points per game. They're shooting from deep up nearly 10% as well. So, Seth, you were a part of the conversations that we had all of last week. It was all the hand-wringing and, oh, the Sixers are in trouble and they don't look good with Harden and this is a bad matchup. And yes, the Raptors were playing without some people, particularly Scotty Barnes. But can we say that a lot of that concern and consternation in Philadelphia has gone away after two games?
For this series, without a doubt, everyone's talking about this team. Defensively, I thought they'd have been terrific. They were active. Yeah. They were alert. They got deflections. They established their shot selection was terrific. They established Embiid. And, you know, everyone's talking about Harden. Well, Harden's not doing enough. Harden's doing a lot because I'll tell you what, when Harden has the ball, six eyes are on him. So all those open jumpers that Tobias Harris gets, all those open jumpers that Tyrese Maxey gets where he can drive closeouts, come from the defense is set to contain Harden and keep him out of the lane. So, like, to me, I think this is sustainable, but that next team they're playing is the most physically tough, competitive defensive team in the NBA. Not a good matchup for the Sixers.
That would be Miami, assuming both of those teams get there, and we'll see. Miami still has three games to win, and the Sixers still have two, and they'll have to do it without Matisse Thybulle in Toronto. But interestingly, they've barely played him through these first two games, Monica, so they're ready for that.
Indeed, and I think while we celebrate the maxi train, I know my friend Diana Rossini loves Tyrese Maxey. The one thing that I think should not be undersold about what Maxey has been able to bring is his effort on both sides of the basketball. Last night, he held Fred VanVleet to 2 of 12 when he was the primary defender. And that speaks to your point, Seth. I also was impressed with the overall Sixers defense, the energy there, the cohesion, shall we call it. When James Harden is in the backcourt getting steals and picking folks off, like, what is happening here? Now, however, in terms of Maxey offensively, the sustainability that I questioned, last night he had 15 transition baskets of the 28 transition points that the Sixers scored. Those transition opportunities are not going to come in the same way should they run into Miami.
And then just as a final thought here for the moment, Seth, you mentioned that the Warriors are just a little different from everyone and thus they're hard to defend. So is Joel Embiid, right? I mean, there are a lot of good players. There is no one in the league like him right now. So when he's going, they're awfully tough, yes?
Yeah, so you can put your whole front court in foul trouble. His ability to get to the line, draw fouls, his ability to finish so many different ways, ability to actually yesterday, I thought he was really active defensively. He's a different cat. And when you surround him with shot makers, and I'm telling you, don't get caught up in the numbers of Harden in terms of the amount of points. Get caught up in terms of how you've got a game plan. The playoffs are all about game plans. You got a game plan for Harden, that makes the game easy for everyone else.
All right, Seth, stay close by. Monica, stay close. Mm-hmm. We'll get to the football here, but we've got Jay Will coming up as we go, Jalen coming up, much more on the NBA playoffs. But right now to the NFL, where Baker Mayfield still awaits his next destination. The Panthers, and we've talked a lot about this, have been a rumored landing spot for Mayfield, despite already picking up Sam Darnold's fifth-year option. It's interesting because Mayfield and Darnold were selected two picks apart in the same draft a few years ago. So let me get the football squad in here. Diana Rossini is in our studio today. And again, Lewis Riddick and Mike Tannenbaum. We've talked a lot about Carolina. What can you tell us about the Panthers and Baker?
Yeah, Mike, the sense I was getting just a few weeks ago was that the Carolina Panthers had zero interest in Baker Mayfield, and Baker Mayfield kind of had zero interest in the Panthers. And now it seems that has changed a bit. But in terms of when we could see actual movement, I was told from a Panther source, this is not going to go down before the draft. That's if they were to trade for Baker Mayfield. Remember, there's a lot that goes into this in terms of Baker's contract. He's owed roughly $19 million, right? And that's something that the Cleveland Browns really do not want to have to pay at all. So it's really going to come down to what team is going to be willing to take on that deal. And as of right now, from the sources I've talked to around the league, there isn't a team that wants to take on that contract.
It's interesting. Now, you say that it's not going to happen before the draft. The Panthers have the sixth pick in the draft. A lot of people wonder if they'll take a quarterback there. Maybe that will determine if they need to make a trade or not. But before I bring the other guys in, let me put the panel up there again from what Robbie Anderson said, because if Carolina does get Baker Mayfield, they'll have to deal with this. Robbie Anderson, their receiver, responding to the notion of getting Baker Mayfield as his quarterback with those words, no. And if you look at the collection of quarterbacks he played with in New York, you think to yourself, wow, and he won't play with Baker Mayfield.
He's like, no, not again.
That's really sort of like that. So Lewis, I want to frame the question this way. You've got Robbie Anderson literally saying no. You've got a league in which teams are willing to move heaven and earth to do anything they can to get a quarterback. And here's Baker Mayfield, who just a few years ago was the first pick in the draft, and no one seems to be willing to move anything to get him. What is the league saying to Baker Mayfield, Lewis?
That your talent doesn't trump all the other things that you bring along with you right now. You're not one of those types of players that will overlook some of the things from a football character standpoint that could negatively affect our locker room. That's what the league is telling you. And any team that brings him in at this point really does need to sit down and talk to Baker about exactly what he would be bringing to the football team and what they expect from him from a leadership perspective. Look, we talk about this when we're talking about quarterback makeup with every single player, especially at that position, and how important it is. How important it is to have a positive impact on the players around you. Just not what you can do to make them better on the field as far as your throwing ability, but what do you do to inspire them to put in extra work and be someone that the rest of the team will follow and follow your example. And look, Baker right now, I don't think anybody is following his example. No one was following it in Cleveland. And look, there's enough circumstantial evidence from other players around the league that suggests that, look, not many other players want to follow his example right now. So I think if you're a prospective team in terms of, you know, employing Baker down the road, You have to take it slowly with this. You have to make sure that you vet this situation properly, because quite honestly, if you're entertaining bringing him in right now, then that probably means that you're pretty much running out of options as far as how you're going to address the position. And if you're going to bring him in, understand that this could... it could potentially make the situation worse if he has not learned from some of the mistakes that he has made in Cleveland in terms of his leadership style and how it subsequently affects the rest of the locker room.
I mean, that's strong words, but it's hard to argue with them. Mike T., when I asked you that same question this morning, you had a very specific answer, so I'll ask it again. What is the league specifically saying to Baker Mayfield?
Shh, quiet down. Very similar to what Lewis just said. Be a problem solver. You know, you look at the last year or so, Tyrod Taylor had a lung punctured. Matt Ryan may be the greatest quarterback in the history of the Falcons. Neither guy went off on social media. We need you to be a leader. We need you to help change the locker room for the better. And when you see Robbie Anderson's comment, that's just very indicative of what people feel. Now, hopefully Baker Mayfield's humbled by this, Greeny. And I have firsthand experience. In 1998 at the Jets, we signed Vinny Testaverde, the former number one pick overall, who had a disappointing career in June, and he led us to the championship game that year. So his career is not over, and let's hope that he learns from what's going on now, which is right now the noise just isn't worth his production.
Yeah, and look, and Diana, I can't argue with the word they're saying. Here's the reality. I mean, not only was he the first pick in the draft 4 years ago, 2 years ago, the season before this past one, he led them to the playoffs. He won a playoff game. He played well in that loss against Kansas City. We're not that far removed from him playing pretty well. So it is remarkable where it's gone so quickly.
Yeah, and guys, I've covered the Browns for years with Baker Mayfield on this team.
And
I never got the sense that he was a bad leader. That was never, I never walked away from a game thinking Baker's not the right guy here. Are there flaws? Absolutely. I don't think this is so much about who Baker Mayfield is as a player. I think this has a lot to do with where the market's at, team needs, quarterback spots are filled at this point, but also going back to that contract, how much is Cleveland willing to eat there on that deal?
But you don't think that the Odell dad thing, that felt like a bad thing for him?
Yeah, but look, we can split hairs on all this. Odell's done some good things. Odell has done some bad things in terms of his own value, his own work. And maybe that didn't work. That's okay.
Yeah.
Not every relationship is going to work.
But I mean, when his dad posts that thing, and usually the entire world rallies around your quarterback when that happens, and instead it felt like half that locker room was on the other side.
Yeah, there was a point when I had a lot of conversations with coaches on the staff as well, including head coach Kevin Stefanski, and they were all in on Baker Mayfield and what he could do. Did they think he was an elite quarterback? Did they think he was at the level of now, let's say, Deshaun Watson? No, I never got that sense, but they felt that he could lead this team. Right now, he just doesn't have a job. And I do think a lot of his talking that we saw last week when he went on that podcast, I think a lot of that is panic. I think he's looking at the league right now going, where am I going to go? And that's a normal reaction. And maybe just not the best, right, Mike?
Let's see if he listens to what the suggestions here were from Lewis and Mike Tannenbaum, who are people who know about these decisions. Quickly, I want to get to one other thing. So yesterday, we showed you this cryptic tweet that Tom Brady posted the other day with the eyes, and he was shouting out Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, and Patrick Mahomes. We knew it would be something interesting, and it turns out it is. They're going to be playing golf together in a charity match. You know these matches, they take place. It's going to be Brady and Rodgers, the old guys, against Allen and Mahomes, the young guns. And Mahomes talked yesterday about facing off on this golf match, which will be played in June.
Oh, man, I think the reason we're going to win is because we're going to be able to play the course a little differently than old Tom and old Aaron over there. So they're going to be hit playing it nice and easy. You know, they might get us on a couple par threes and stuff like that. But whenever we can really open it up and use the drivers, it's going to be nice to be able to use our little wedges while they're using their six irons. So that'll help us a little bit.
All right, so he's talking trash. Brady's talking trash, too. He said, look, an artist's rendering of me watching Josh Allen. I hadn't seen that until just now. That's actually quite funny. And so these guys will talk a little trash and have a little fun. But let's actually turn it into a really interesting conversation because, you know, they're four of the handful of best quarterbacks in the league, and they're all on really good teams. So my question to this group is, which one of them wins the Super Bowl this coming year? Brady, Rodgers, Allen, Mahomes. Diana, you're first.
I'm going to start. I think Buffalo Bills, Josh Allen, I think they are just ready as a team top to bottom to go all the way this year. Guys, I still, when I'm driving in traffic, think about that game against the New England Patriots and what Josh Allen was able to do on offense when everything was working. I think they've got the best chance.
I think he probably still thinks about the one against Kansas City where they lost in the final seconds. Lewis, how about you? Which one of these four wins it next?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Buffalo as well, simply because I think the defense will play better this year in important spots, especially once they get into the playoffs, unlike they played against Kansas City. And I think, look, Josh, I think he's going to take his game to another level, despite the fact that Brian Daboll left. I think Kansas City and them will play once again in the AFC Championship game, but I think Buffalo will be the one.
Mike T., which one?
Tampa Bay Buccaneers, in the words of Mike Greenberg, sneaky big news, taking nothing away from Bruce Arians. They got better at the head coach position. I really believe in Todd Bowles. They got the best quarterback and a great new head coach, the Buccaneers.
Yeah, I'll take the Bucs as well for two reasons. One, I'm never betting against Tom Brady again, no matter what happens. And two, I think the Bills are the best team. But they've got like seven great teams in the AFC. I think the road is a little bit less traveled, if you will, for Brady's Bucks. We will see. We're just getting started. What a terrific morning we have working for you. Coming up, star wide receivers across the NFL demanding new deals. Could this all lead to another round of major trades in the NFL? Diana's got the inside. Plus, the Celtics absolutely swarmed KD in their game one win. Are the Nets in trouble? Just one game in. We'll answer that question and more next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Back on Get Up in time for Get Your Eyes Checked, which is brought to you by America's Best Contacts and Eyeglasses. And of course, Diana, this is Marshawn Lynch on a Zamboni. He's one of the new owners of the Seattle Kraken.
I'm going to guess that he didn't do a very good job. But here's the thing. When you drive the Zamboni, you're like the lead singer of like a rock band, right? Everybody wants to be you. You go to a hockey game, it's like the most popular person. It is the most fitting job for Marshawn Lynch. I just want to throw Skittles on the ice. That's what I wanted to say.
He's having some fun out there. All right, as we continue in just a moment, back to the NBA playoffs. The Sixers have answered the bell in their first round series. Could high-flying Philly be headed to the finals? We'll talk about it with Jay Will. Plus, wait a minute. Did you hear Mr. Mahomes say ta-ta to Tyreek? Does he really believe what he's saying himself? Diana will answer that question as we roll on. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Start your mornings with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Every weekday at 6 a.m. Eastern, they answer the pressing questions around the sports world.
Let's talk about Steph's legacy.
They're going to probably draft an explosive guy.
And deliver their hot takes on breaking news and new developments.
The Lakers are one of the worst jobs in the NBA.
Tune in every weekday at 6 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN2.
And J. Will makes his way across the hall from KJM for a good conversation here on Get Up. Let's get to it. Jay Will, Warriors handled the Nuggets last night. They're up 2-0 and they look great. What are you seeing?
I see that Jordan Poole has expanded the championship window of the Warriors for another 5 years. That's what I see. Jordan Poole, 28th pick in the draft, dropping 25 points. I mean, the way he's playing.
This man said five.
It extends the window, okay. Does it not?
It does, but five? Woo. Okay.
Five's a long window for guys at that age, but it's hard to argue at least that it extends it into this June because they've looked very good. Jay Will, Mavs even up their series with the Jazz. Jalen Brunson had 41.
This is what worries you about Utah. They're just underwhelming. Like, you're losing a game without Luka Doncic, and you know that Jalen Brunson's a good player, but you have Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert. You have all the pieces. What is wrong in Utah?
I don't know, but I have Stephen A. in my ear yelling, he should come to the Knicks. Donovan Mitchell should come to the Knicks. And then we got the Sixers red hot now through two games. They look great. Last night was Embiid's night.
I mean, look, Joel Embiid, when he has 19 points in the first quarter, they play aggressive. Tyrese Maxey getting points in transition. This is when Philly's at their best. Toronto is depleted, but you have to win the games that are in front of you.
All right, so if you're just joining us, Jay Will is here. You saw Monica and our Uncle Seth, no relation. Seth Greenberg is with us as well. And let's stop down and get into this a little bit. Embiid and Harden, Jay Will. Mm-hmm. We began this postseason with them as the biggest question mark. We said the other day, if Allen Iverson was the answer, James Harden is the question. Well, through two games, have they erased that?
This is the championship version of James Harden that we need to see. People always revert back to where he was in Houston when he was a volume scorer, a volume shooter. Right now, he's not as efficient as you would like for him to be. Three-point line field goals, he could be better. But him being a pass-first, kick-the-ball-ahead, a hockey assist type of guard, playing through Joel Embiid, playing through Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris in transition, and taking over games when you need him to in spurts, that is the right version of James Harden that can win a championship, not the one that you remember 3 years ago.
That's interesting, Monica, because we sit here and we count. He didn't have 37 last night, so he didn't play well. Do you agree with that take?
I do agree that I'm not alarmed because 20 assists through two ball games is impressive, and they have not needed him. I am concerned as you run into a team that is not depleted and hangs their hat on the defensive end. You are going to need a guy that can just go get you a bucket, and I'm not sure that what we're seeing from Maxey is sustainable at a 30-point-per-game clip.
Well, so let me get Seth in as well. Seth, so that's an interesting one. You brought up the specter of Miami's defense. And again, if everything holds, that would be the next matchup for the Sixers. Will they need Harden to have more explosion on the offensive side? I mean that almost literally, like to go into the 30s in order to beat that team.
They need the threat of Harden to be able to do that. And you talk about Max, you talk about Tobias Harris. Why are they benefiting? Because you know what? The game is easier when Harden has the basketball. So, yeah, he's going to need to score a little bit more. But when he has the ball, there are six eyes on him. When he has the ball, all of a sudden your defensive game plan is to keep him out of the lane. When you're keeping him out of the lane, you're helping. When you're helping, now all of a sudden the ball is kicked to Max. He's got an open three or driving a closeout. All of a sudden it's kicked to Tobias Harris. All of a sudden there's more space you can post it to Joel Embiid. So, yes, he has to score a little bit more, but I agree with Jay Will. This version of Harden, because you still have to game plan for that 30-point outburst, so you've got to shrink the court some when he has it, is a dangerous, dangerous version. But Miami Heat, those dudes are just different defensively.
Different.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see if they get that far. We're still at least a week away from that. A quick take on the Warriors. I want to make sure we get to the Nets and Celtics, which I know it's only one game, but it feels like the best series. But as far as the Warriors are concerned, you just said, I'd like you to expand on the thought. Poole makes this Warriors team a championship team. The addition of him, as good as he looks at this moment, you're saying he makes them a championship team.
Klay Thompson is able to kind of find his groove. It relieves pressure on him. Draymond is just doing Draymond things. And here's what I heard him say the other night, Greeny, I really like about Jordan Poole. He's starting now in place of Steph Curry. He's like, I just want to make impact.
Yeah.
It wasn't about starting, not starting. It was about making impact. He can do that with his handling ability and his shooting ability.
Well, it's interesting because we were doing countdown over the weekend, and Jalen and Stephen A. and I were talking about this, Monica, that the thing about Poole is, because Steph won't come off the bench, obviously, for much longer, but he can play for Steph and he can play for Clay. Yeah. So he can spell either one of them and you don't lose as much as you normally would.
That is a perfect observation, but at this point, the teams that are left playing have stars, right? And so the question has been, who is the support guy that is going to blossom? And Poole has been able to do that. What I think is unique about Poole is that the the support, the actual stars around him, are not going to go away. They are established in the playoffs. And so he is free just to go, as you said, Jay, and make an impact without having to think a ton, because the system and the framework is well established for the Golden State Warriors.
Seth, is it sustainable? Does this team now look like the biggest threat in the West to a Suns team that has been the best team in the league all year?
Without a doubt, and not even close, because of their style of play. They play differently than everyone else. They have floor gamers all over the floor. They make you match up with them. You see what's happening with Denver. Look, Jokic is an MVP, but you know what? He's basically neutralized because of this lineup. Shot makers, floor gamers, space the floor, swarm defensively, create easy offense, no doubt about it. They're the best passing and cutting team in the NBA, and they don't just rely on ball screens. They rely on ball and people movement. They are a hard team to prepare for and a tough matchup because of this smaller lineup.
I will just add, though, Uncle Seth, should they run into the Memphis Grizzlies,
yeah.
I do think that there's some symmetry there in terms of how they will be able to match up in a budding rivalry in terms of a team that can move quickly as well, can defend, and might have some answers in terms of the size for this small ball line.
They knocked them out of the play-in tournament last year. But yeah. I do need to see them control and handle their stuff against Minnesota tonight.
Respond.
I was about to say, Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns might have a different idea. That looks like it has the makings of a great series. But there's been nothing so far like game one, obviously, of Celtics and Nets. And I had Jay Willen here yesterday talking about it. Let's move forward on it, Monica, because it was frustrating, if you're rooting for the Nets, to watch Kevin Durant. He struggled, obviously, on Sunday. But he also was, they were swarming him. They were bodying him like crazy. And it didn't look like the Nets made any obvious adjustment, at least to me. So give me the one thing the Nets can do that will make it different tonight to give KD an opportunity to be much more impactful.
Well, I think the thing with the Celtics is they switched so aggressively and they crowded KD. I wondered if there was more space and opportunity for Patty Mills as a floor spacer. Sometimes you would see Bruce Brown around KD, and because he's not as much of a threat from three, the spacing was easy. It was easier for the Celtics to collapse. So I just wonder if there's some space on the floor for Patty Mills, a guy that shoots the three at a higher percentage just to create some room and some alleviation for KD.
Coach, help me. You're the coach, Seth. So you give me how we are going to make sure they can't do to Kevin Durant what they did to him on Sunday.
You got to move him in the action. You can't put him in one spot or just pin down. They're playing above him. They're playing into his body. He's got to create space so that he can use his length, use his ability to attack a closeout. How do you do that? You move him off of the basketball. You move him off screens, but not down screens, more along the baseline. You open up floors, back cut someone, have him come behind, so now he's moving and catching the ball on the move. Let's face it, you can't guard Kevin Durant when he's catching it on the move. Can't guard the dude, so you can't put him in one place. Too easy to defend, too easy to shrink the court, too easy to play into his body.
Monica, I remember when I first got drafted, I went out to a nightclub, and I went to the club, and they took me to the VIP table.
Boy.
I'm like, yeah, I'm doing it. Me and my friends were doing it.
Okay.
And then I look up, I'm like, damn, I'm not a – that's the real – Why am I down here? Why am I not up there? Who's up there? I want to be up there. I feel like that's where Jason Tatum is right now.
Ooh.
Jason Tatum's looking at Kevin Durant. He's looking at Giannis. He's looking at all these great Steph Curry. He's like, I need to be up on that upper layer of VIP. He got his first head. I mean, he literally got the first win, made the game-winning bucket.
Yeah.
I think there's a battle right now.
Yeah.
Who is the best player in the world type of battle? KD kind of got blitzed a little bit game one. I'm curious to see who KD is in game two against the physicality of Jaylen Brown, Grant Williams, and Jason Tatum.
He's going to have a huge
I'm curious.
He's going to.
But if he doesn't, like, where would you guys be? What happens if they actually game plan again and they're physical with him again and he doesn't have the same performance?
I don't know.
I'm just asking.
Okay,
like, where
if Ime Udoka should absolutely be a finalist for Coach of the Year, if that absolutely happens. And listen, I'm not taking anything away from the Celtics defense. I do think, to your point, KD is still a guy.
Yes, he is. He's up there, yes.
So he's going to respond. But it behooves the rest of that team. Like, him responding is not a solely KD thing. What's my man, Steve Nash? You listening to what Coach Seth just said? Like, there's more to it than just KD responding.
I agree. And Bruce Brown.
We'll see if
headline material.
Steve Nash had super quickly here. Super quickly, Seth, who wins tonight? Game two, Nets Celtics. Who you like?
I think the Nets are going to win. They've got to understand. They've got to move him into action. They can't keep him so still. And then I think other guys got to step up, not just Kyrie, but other guys got to step up. But that defensive game plan for the Celtics, man, that was good.
I misspoke. It's tomorrow night, of course, but this question remains. Who wins?
I think the Nets respond. I think if it was a close game without KD playing well, I think they respond.
Yeah, six turnovers to KD, that's not his thing. Nets
we'll see. If only because we'd like to see that one go seven, we'll see if they can do it. Jay, Will, thank you. Back on KJM Radio in a moment. In the meantime, coming up here, star wide receivers across the league are demanding new deals. Could all of this lead to another flurry of major trades in the NFL? Diana's got the answer next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
A spectacular April we have working here. We've got the next German Classico between Bayern and Dortmund on Saturday. Then you got Tyson Fury putting his belt on the line against Dillian White at Wembley. That's on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. We have the 120th annual Copa del Rey on ESPN Plus. And then the series finale of Tom Brady's Man in the Arena drops Tuesday night, 11 Eastern, on ESPN Plus. A little bit of everything for you coming up this month, where in the NFL, 13 teams have started their offseason workouts, including the Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs looking to fill the void left by trading away Tyreek Hill. Mahomes was working out with teammates in Texas, and he was yesterday talking about the new offense.
We'll have to find production in different ways than we did the last year because Tyreek was such a big part of our offense. But I think you've seen in games that we haven't had Tyreek or we haven't had certain people, other guys have stepped up and made plays happen, and I expect that to happen this year as well.
I don't think it'll be significantly different. It'll be similar to what we did when in the games that Tyreek couldn't play in. There are certain things that he did very well that we'll have people try to fill in those spots, but without forcing anything.
So it's interesting. And Lewis, you know that program as well as anybody does. What is your expectation about what that offense will look like and how effective it will be in the absence of probably its most dynamic piece?
Yeah, I think structurally, Greeny, it'll look the same because they have a DNA, they have a methodology, they have a philosophy that Andy Reid has brought with him and he's continually tweaked during his time in Kansas City, and that won't change. They will still be a primarily 11 personnel type of team. They'll run some 12 personnel. They'll get in their trips 3-by-1 sets. They'll run the same kind of cover three beaters out of their 3-by-1s that they've always run. They'll run their same kind of boot game action off of, out of 12 personnel. They'll do the same things. It's just that now from in terms of how they replace Tyreek Hill's production, that's not going to be a one-for-one swap. They're not going to expect to bring in one person and then have him be a 100-plus catch type of guy. It'll be by committee, and they will utilize Juju Smith-Schuster's ability to work the middle of the field at a very high clip and at a very effective clip in a way that they really haven't had someone do that at the wide receiver position thus far. They'll use MVS on the third level, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, as far as a field stretcher on the outside and someone who they can also put on the inside at the slot position the same way they did Tyreek. So they will mix and match, and they will continue to come up with the kind of chunk plays that they have become known for. And don't forget this. They still have Patrick Mahomes. They still have the draft. They still have two first-round picks, two second-round picks in this draft. So, look, Brett Veach, the general manager down there, knows what he needs to do in order to keep this offense humming along. But make no mistake, Tyreek is one of one. But also make no mistake about this. They found him late in the draft. I'm not going to say that they're going to find another guy fifth round and lower that will have the kind of production that he had. But this is a position that I think historically you have been able to find great surplus value, meaning performance value relative to cost, throughout the draft and in the later rounds. And I think they will do that once again this year down in Kansas City.
Mike T, how are they handling the draft? Would you expect them to take a receiver? Lewis just mentioned they have two first-round picks. We expect six, maybe seven receivers in round one. Do you think Kansas City takes one, Mike?
Absolutely, and I think the verb is scour. You look at this list here, Greeny, there's a lot of really good receivers. And if they come out of this with Jameson Williams, they arguably have a chance of being better because I think he's that explosive when he returns from his ACL. But as Lewis mentioned, when you think about Juju Smith-Schuster, Valdez Scantling, and you add a receiver, they'll be different than they were a year ago, but they have two running backs and Ronald Jones, who has 76 receptions, Edwards-Helaire, who has 55. So I think they draft a receiver. They have running backs who can catch. So I think this offense will still be a very formidable one this season.
Fair enough. But wait, there's more, because there's this story. And Diana, it was Shefty who I first saw tweeting about this yesterday.
Yeah.
That there are a bunch of very high-profile wide receivers in the NFL who suddenly may create the next wave of monster trades. Take us through.
You have receivers who are looking at the receiver market and looking at these other guys who just got paid and have 1 year left on their deal and going, I want an extension. Guys like Titans' A.J. Brown, Niners' Deebo Samuel, Terry McLaurin in Washington. You have these three guys who we know are stars of this offense, and they want to make that kind of money. And they don't want to step on the field until they get it. So
this is the money you're talking about. This is what the contracts have been for these receivers this offseason. And you're telling us Deebo Samuel, Terry McLaurin.
And A.J. Brown.
And A.J. Brown are basically saying, we want this kind of money. And are they doing, do we have the social media stuff going
on? Yeah, let's just break this down. Let's start with Deebo. Okay, so Deebo scrubbed his social media account. A.J. Brown with the Titans. He got rid of the name Tennessee in his yesterday. Love, this is what you do in 2022. Mm-hmm. It's like my single girlfriends when they break up with their boyfriends. They immediately erase the guy like they never existed. They still exist. You're still playing for the team. You still have one more year left on your deal. So as much as they can say they don't want to do that, unless they hold out. That's always an option. So let's start with Deebo, right?
Yeah.
So Deebo's been really open about his relationship with Kyle Shanahan. It works. He loves playing for Kyle. He loves playing for San Francisco. And Kyle loves Deebo. We see it on the field. We see how they utilize him. So from the conversations I've had over the last few weeks, this seems like it's going to be a situation where a deal will get struck. Right now, it's just not. And he's not showing up to any of these voluntary workouts, voluntary meetings that teams are doing at this time. Then you have A.J. Brown with the Tennessee Titans. He's obviously looking for an extension there. He's the center piece of this offense after Derrick Henry there. And from what I can tell, both sides, from having conversations with both sides, they are working towards an extension to keep A.J. Brown in Tennessee. And look, this organization's been very open. They love A.J. You don't hear them talk about players a lot and how much they love them. They love them. In terms of a trade, I was told that's off the table. That is not something they want to do. They want to keep A.J. Brown in Nashville. And then you have Terry McLaurin in Washington where, you've heard the Washington staff talk about trying to get a deal done. I was told, though, both sides have not had good conversations just yet. They want to keep him. He's a leader on the field, off the field. Now, he did show up to meetings this week. They're just working out. They're lifting. They're doing small stuff right now. But I was told that he probably will not be showing up to actually work out on the field if a deal isn't
done. Can I throw one more name into this?
Yeah, sure.
A guy who's in the same year as DK Metcalf.
Yes. Well, DK Metcalf is another guy who's going to want to be paid here. And of all the names of these receivers that we're talking about in terms of a potential trade, that's the only one I've heard where it could happen. He could be on the trading block because we know Seattle is in a rebuild, right? We know Drew Lock right now is their quarterback. This is the post-Russell Wilson era, and it's begun. And essentially, at this point, they're just trying to get better. And it would make sense if they were to try to get some more picks here.
So, look, the second they start scrubbing the social media, I start paying attention. So, Lewis Riddick, let me ask you, what do you make of this? If these receivers are out there doing their thing, if you're running another franchise here, how does this get handled, Lewis?
Look, I think it's always good to try and take care of your own. And look, three of the five guys that we had put up there on that screen, when you're talking about guys like Stephon Diggs, Mike Williams, I mean, these are all guys who were homegrown players and the teams took care of them. So look, and Chris Godwin, I mean, those are deals that I like because of the fact that you're taking care of your own guys. Look, Tyreek Hill broke the bank. Miami was desperate. They wanted to make sure they set, a guy like Tua up. So I understand them going out and getting him. And Devontae is a unique situation with Derek Carr. I would look at it like this. If it's one of my own guys and I really feel as though he's an integral part of the franchise, he's someone who's been dependable as far as his availability, hasn't had a long injury history and has produced. And if it's something that makes sense for us 3, 4, 5 years down the road from a cap planning standpoint, I'm trying to to go ahead and take care of those guys, because we know that wide receivers are very, very important. Mm-hmm. If I'm a team that's looking for a wide receiver right now, given the fact that you are finding guys in the second and third rounds, fourth, fifth rounds, look at where Tyreek Hill was drafted, Darnell Mooney was drafted, guys like Gabe Davis up in Buffalo, where these guys were drafted, I would not be willing to go out right now and start beating the bushes as far as trying to make a trade to pay someone 20 plus, 25 plus million dollars to bring into my football team, considering the fact that I can get tremendous value in the draft, second round and later, at this position and get great production. I would really pump the brakes on that if I was an acquiring team looking to go outside of my own structure.
It's interesting, yeah. Mike. You actually said if you were running a team right now, what would you do with the draft?
I would be scouring, and I would be drafting one every year.
Because?
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
There is more wide receivers out there, and this is an old Coach Parcells axiom, Greeny, which is what we play with on Sunday is what they play with on Saturdays, meaning the way college football is going, and Lewis just alluded to it, year after year, we're going to see more and more receivers come out throughout the draft, and because of the supply of it, I agree with Lewis, you don't have to overpay because you can get one every year.
Man, it's going to be fascinating. We'll watch that. That's now become the second highest paid position.
But there's still what there are still, while I agree with the advice that these guys are giving, there are teams that are keeping an eye on these receivers and to see what happens with them, like the New York Jets.
We'll see where they okay, so you say that right when I have to go to a break.
I'm sorry.
As we continue in a moment, the match is set. Brady, Rodgers, Mahomes, Allen, can the old vets one-up the young guns? We're talking about it as we get up with you on ESPN.